Today, on Rainbow Country, trans musician Patricia Wilson, plus my Big Brother Canada coverage, continues. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, this is Emily Saliers from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Rainbow Country on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Rainbow Country may use words or phrases not suitable for all audiences. No matter who you are.
Hi, this is Carol Pope.
No matter what you do.
This is City Councilor Kristen Wong Tan.
We all have a story to tell, and it starts right here on this gay radio show. We lift our voices, share our stories, and we'll raise our pride. I'm Mark Tara. Join me on this continuing journey through Rainbow Country. Rainbow Country, a little gay radio show that helps give voice to the LGBT community. I'm your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. Get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. Honestly, it's the best way to keep up to date with all things Rainbow Country, who's coming up on a particular episode, on a particular month, that sort of thing. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. So, do you have an interesting story to share? Well, I'm willing to hear. Send me an email. I will have you on the show. mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, podomatic.com, Google Play Music, and now, as of today, Rainbow Country can be found on Spotify. Yes, we're getting there, honey. We're getting there. Yeah, I just found that out today. Kind of cool. Rainbow Country now on Spotify. It's all about choices, right? Don't forget, everything is hooked up through my website, including the archives, marktara.com, marktara.com. So this is episode 93. On today's show, my Big Brother Canada coverage continues. There was a double eviction on Thursday, so we'll hear my exit interview with Hamza and Veronica, who were taken out on that double eviction. I also spotlight trans musician Patricia Wilson. She's one of the founding members of Toronto's rock group, Crack Puppy. So my friends, strap in, because this journey through Rainbow Country begins right now with Big Brother Canada.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Erica, Hamza, how are you both doing right now?
You know, we're a little disappointed. We're a little pissed off. We could be doing a lot better, that's for sure.
I'm pretty bitter, not going to lie. I'm really bitter. I don't know why.
I understand.
I mean, I know why. It's kind of sad.
I understand. Let's go back in time a bit. The two of you find out you're going into the Big Brother Canada house. Did you have a strategy going into the house? And I'll let Hamza answer this one first.
Well, as you know, I was the first person to actually walk into the house. And my strategy for the first week, I was trying to lay low, trying to read people so I can connect with. I didn't want to, like, go out and make a big move right off the bat. But for somehow, I got stuck with Andrew. And, you know, shout out to Andrew. He's a great guy. And I met... So they nominated Rosina and Alejandro that first week, and I was really pushing to turn the house around to vote Rosina to stay, because I think for the long term she would have been way better for my game. But I tried doing it under the radar, and then I kept putting it in Andrew's head, and then he made himself the target. So I was always trying to, like, kind of manipulate people, make them the targets, do big moves without getting blood on my hands, but it didn't really work out for me.
Mm-hmm. And Veronica, what about yourself? Did you have a strategy going into the Big Brother Canada house?
The only strategy that I had going into the house was I definitely was going to play a more passive and light, competitive and athletic aspect to the game, because I knew that I'm a very strong physical player. I had a feeling that going into the house, there was probably no chance that any of the girls could beat me in a physical comp. You know, that was just what I had going in, and I knew that I would already have a target going on my, on my back, just because of my outgoing personality, all my, my crazy tats and my colored hair. So I knew that walking into the house, I would have a target on my back from the get-go. But unfortunately, with how it played out in Canada voting me in and me coming in a week late, I already had a target on my back, and I was part of some two-week plans, so that strategy completely changed, and it was to just play as hard as I can every single chance that I get in every competition and win it, because that was the only real way that I can gain safety for myself every single week until the end.
So Hamza, you were all about stirring the pot, making big moves, and during your HOH reign, Hamza, you put up someone that seemed to be an ally of yours. You put up Jesse, and he ended up leaving the Big Brother Canada house. Why did you put up Jesse in the first place, knowing that he could leave the game?
Well, as you said, I'm all about stirring the pot. I'm all about making big moves. And, it was 2 weeks into the game, and then I won my HOH, and we were heading into week three. And for that, it's still till today, everyone that was sleeping in the red room, especially Jesse, Derek, and Kayla, they were just always feeling safe. They hadn't talked a word of game. They were always just playing pool, chilling around, and they thought they would just slide by. So I was like, you know what? I want to break up that summer camp vibe, so that's why I put up Jesse. In the beginning, I wasn't intentionally trying to get rid of him. I put him up to stir up the pot a little bit, to let people scramble, but I still wanted to get rid of Liv because I thought she was a smart player, which I should have done because she got rid of me now. But I didn't want to get rid of Jesse, but as the days went by, as soon as I put up Jesse on the block, he showed a side of him, like, very panicking. He was always panicking. He was always angry, stuff like that. He showed a side of him that I didn't really like, and I didn't want to work with him. And then in the end, I got rid of him just to kind of, like, show the showman. So you guys are vulnerable now.
Understood. Veronica, you called a house meeting, and you made a very passionate, compelling speech to your fellow house guests. Hamza was there.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they chose not to keep you in the house. Why do you think they wouldn't want to keep you? Because you would have been a bigger target in front of most of them, if not all of them. Why do you think they chose not to keep you in the house?
I think because at the end of the day, even though I was a bigger target that they could keep in the house, because of sort of the flip-flop that I did with Jesse in the prior week, this is the thing. Everyone in that house was scared of me. Every single person was intimidated from the moment I walked in. And I think that the worry that they had was that, yes, I would be a very strong target to keep in the house, and I would possibly be a very strong ally for them to keep close to them. However, they were worried that if I truly was lying And I won a competition that I would be able to turn on them and get them out of the house in a heartbeat. I truly think that's what it was. I know that they saw strengths in me. They saw benefits in me. But they knew that they could probably be the one, you know, the ones that I was hunting. And I don't think that they wanted to take the chance. And to me, that's a compliment because, you know what? In this game of Big Brother and the person that I am in that house, they shouldn't want to take a chance because, you know, at the end of the day, whether it was this week, next week, you know, I probably would have sent one of them home. So it was a good game move on their part, but I think they just knew, regardless of the benefits that I could have towards them, that if I was truly working against them, they wouldn't be able to last very long.
Understood. So my last question for the both of you, you were in the Big Brother Canada 6 house. What was the best part of being in the Big Brother Canada house? And Hamza, I'll let you go first.
What was the best part of being in the house?
Yeah.
You know, being in the Big Brother Canada house itself was an amazing experience. It was unbelievable being there. You know, we've watched the show before and just being there, you know, you don't really know how, like, what to do at first. You're kind of like flustered. You're like, wow, I can't believe that I'm here. The best part of it was definitely forming like some of the friendships I formed that are going to last a lifetime, especially like with people like Erica, Marin, Will, even V. You know, like we formed friendships that are going to last forever. Besides that, I really enjoyed the comps. I came into, you know, playing the comps and I really, really enjoyed them. And it was just an unbelievable experience. And just to be entertaining and, you know, trying to entertain people and having fun with it, it was an amazing experience.
And Veronica, the same question. What was the best part of being part of Big Brother?
I definitely think there's two parts of my answer. I think the first part would definitely be, you know, being able to show myself and the world what I'm capable of. You know, being able to play in my first competition and winning, you know, my first HOH when all the odds were against me and I was part of this two-week plan, to really just, you know, have this physical and mental drive that just came out of me so fiercely, you know, was unbelievable. It was an unbelievable feeling, and being able to sort of prove that to myself and everyone, you know, around the world was incredible. And I think secondly, to be on national television where I could really let my personality and my way of thinking about life and love just shine through and show the nation that, you know, you should embrace your individuality. I really want to motivate and encourage and inspire, and being able to do this for people all around the world and just become this very huge icon of people that, you know, that can look up to me. I think being able to be put in that position, you know, is something that I've always dreamed of, and I cannot wait to take everything that I learned in the Big Brother house and add it to my everyday life and really just be someone that, you know, people look to when they need a little bit of, you know, sunshine and rainbows in their life.
Well said, Veronica. Hamza, Veronica, you guys were amazing to watch on TV. Thank you so much for that. And thank you so much for your time.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the interview.
Welcome back. Don't forget, Big Brother Canada airs Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays on Global. Check your local listings for airtimes. And to keep up to date with all things Big Brother, especially online, specifically Twitter, whether it's Big Brother Canada, Big Brother US, Big Brother UK, make sure you check out Hamster Watch, all one word, on Twitter. Hamster Watch. They break it down. They break down the highlights, the lowlights, the no lights, the spoilers, all wrapped up with a great sense of humor. Hamster Watch, all one word, on Twitter. Make sure you check them out. When I return, my spotlight on Toronto's very own trans musician, one of the co-founding members of Crack Puppy, Patricia Wilson. Stay with me.
This is City Councillor Kristen Wong Tam, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
She is a musician, a guitarist. She's also a poet. She's one of the founding members of a music group that says, quote, "We make loud, killer noise called music." The group is Crack Puppy, and she is Patricia Wilson. How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you.
You smell good, I must say.
Well, that is the best introduction I've ever had.
You smell good. Great introduction, Mark. So, Crack Puppy,
yes.
The name Crack Puppy, how did that name come about? Because I understand that there's an interesting story to it.
Well, it's interesting if you like animals, because we, the singer and I, we were asked to do something that used to be called Cheap Queers. And it was an annual event. And we hadn't really put a band together, but we had talked about doing something. So we started to rehearse, and we got the gig, and we had to put a band together quickly, but we didn't have a name. So at that point, the old lady and I, Alen, my girlfriend of 25 years, she had just inherited a little half Jack Russell, half Chihuahua. 8 months old, never been trained, didn't get enough walk. And it was crazy. It was one of those dogs, when I corrected it, it would immediately jump on the bed and pee on my side of the bed.
Wow.
I know. Talk about personality, right? So, and it was just crazy. So Drew and I were writing and rehearsing in my living room, and the dog was just going nuts. And I said, "Oh, there's that crack dog." And Drew said, "Puppy." And I said, "That's the name of the band, Crack Puppy."
Because mm-hmm.
it came from the dog, because the dog acted like it was like cracked out of control. So it was Crack Puppy. That's, I don't know how interesting that is, but that's really where the name came from.
And how long has the group been going?
Two thousand two or three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe three, I guess.
So growing
yeah.
up,
mm-hmm.
you took piano lessons from nuns?
From the Ursuline School of Music.
What was that experience like for young Patricia Wilson?
It was, and it was in, the thing is, it was in a really old convent on Olette Avenue in Windsor, Ontario, and it was really big, and you never really saw anybody except your teacher, but you could hear creaking while you're sitting in the waiting room for your lesson,
mm-hmm.
and there's all these assorted noises, like clanging, and the convent was scarier than the actual lessons because it was just so gothic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, the nuns are true goths, right? I mean, the goths have nothing on, you know, on the old school nuns, the way they lived and the way they dress, very goth, right? So it was okay. And the nuns, I mean,
were they interesting?
They were intense.
Were they?
They were intense. They knew what they loved, they knew what they wanted, mm-hmm. and there was nothing in between. You either did it, or, you know, there's always in you know, there's always a price to pay
mm-hmm.
for whatever. But I mean, they were good teachers.
Yeah.
Scary teachers.
When did you discover your love for the guitar? When did that happen for you?
When I saw the Beatles and the Rolling Stones on Ed Sullivan, I knew that I loved guitar. But in my house, it was, you take the piano first.
Okay.
That was the rule.
Do you come from a musical family?
No. It's just my mom and my dad just said, take the piano first,
right.
get the basics, mm-hmm. and then move on. So, and which was true for me
right.
at that point. And all of us kids took piano lessons, some more successful than the others.
From the nuns,
all. Yeah. It was good. It cost my parents a fortune because
yeah.
even to this day, public transit is not my thing.
Mm.
So even as a kid, they had to pay for a cab to get me there.
Wow.
And a cab to get me back.
Standards.
I refused to be on public
transit. Good for you.
And it's pretty well the same. If the old lady isn't with me now, I don't get on it. So.
Wow.
I don't know.
I have to say, your jewelry, I love.
Oh, thanks.
You're wearing some, for a lack of better words, kind of picture like Wonder Woman type thick bracelet on one hand and a leather thing from North Band on the other. Fantastic.
Oh, thanks. It's a collection of found moments and created moments, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, after all, we are our own art, aren't we?
We are.
So you might as well make the most of it.
Do you ever design or have sketches given to creators and they design pieces of jewelry for yourself?
The only thing is the leather piece.
Mm-hmm.
They made it for me at Northbound Leather. I told them what I wanted. I brought two or three bracelets. And my ring they made for me. I showed them pictures and stuff.
Okay.
And they made that for me at Burke's. So,
nice.
Yeah. You know, but other than that, it's a lot of this is almost every single thing on this arm,
mm-hmm.
including the ring, are all gifts.
On your left hand.
On my left hand, yeah. Sorry, you can't see that. On this arm, come on, people, turn your radio on so you can see what's going on. So, yeah, on my left hand, these are all gifts, everything.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm very lucky that way. People are generous around me.
So, apparently,
mm-hmm.
when you were 16, around 16, you hitchhiked from Windsor, Ontario, 16. To Toronto. Why did you want to do that, Patricia Wilson?
Okay, I might have been like 16 or 17, I guess. I don't know.
Because that's pretty young.
I guess.
To do something like that.
I guess it is. It was the 70s. I mean, it's what people did.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was. I didn't go by myself.
Okay.
I had another person with me, and it just everybody hitchhiked. It wasn't, you know. And I mean, I'm going to put this out here now. I'm 63, going on 64. So if you think about the 70s, it was what people did—the hippie thing.
Right.
People, you know. Although hippie, I really wasn't a hippie. That wasn't real fond of. I tried it. Didn't suit me too much. I was way better with the East Coast and the Velvet Underground and stuff. Yeah.
Now, was it that trip that you discovered Alice Cooper and the song School's Out?
It's true. That's true. I can give you a quick story how that happened. We were just hitchhiking, and all of a sudden, this milk truck. You know the old milk trucks where the doors stay open? I don't know if anybody even sees them now. Maybe you see them more in mail trucks, but the doors stay open all the time while they're driving. And it's kind of an old van kind of thing, but the driver can stand up if he wants and drive. So they pull this hippie pulled over, because he was a hippie, and he had two cats on his shoulder, and picked us up, and he drove us to just outside of Toronto. But before he got there, he had to stop at a commune and pick some stuff up. And if you can't see, but I'm doing the quotation
the
marks.
Quotes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pick some stuff up.
Okay.
On his way to Toronto.
Okay.
And during that whole time, I think that album may have just came out, and he was blaring it on his probably an 8-track.
Wow.
Probably an 8-track. Yeah. And that's where we heard it. Yeah.
So was that a seminal moment for you?
I remember it. And I, as you can see, I'm smiling while I'm talking about it. It meant something. It meant it was being Roman Catholic. And I had quit school at 16. Mm. I didn't get along with school and things like that. So it was a time when I realized that you could make your own life. I think that's what hitchhiking and things like that.
And maybe the sentiment, that. School's out.
Exactly. I had quit school, right? which, I mean, and I'll qualify that and say I went back at 21 as an adult student. Mm-hmm. And did my time in university. And, yeah, it was, I mean, I never thought of it that way. It's very interesting that you call it a seminal moment. I never thought of it that way, but I think you could say that. That's a good observation.
Buddies in Bad Times Theater, you've been with them for how long?
About 6 months or a year less than I've been with the old lady. So, yeah.
So like 25 years?
Almost, yeah. Yeah.
And you are now the... You're now
what? Oh, yeah, the bar manager. Yeah.
Okay. And how does that sit with you?
It's fine. Never really wanted to be anybody's boss. That's not my gig.
Do you have a desk?
Oh, yeah.
Do you sit behind a desk?
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
It's not my thing. They know that. They, my, our managing director and the board of directors said, okay, we know you are not good at paperwork, but that's not what we're hiring you. Do your paperwork, but we know that's not your strong point. Mm-hmm. And every staff review, it's always about, you know, you could be a little better at the paperwork. But I love my job. I love people. I love the kids and the people that come, you know, to the bar. I truly do. There's nothing I hate about my job.
What's the best night to go to Buddy's, in your opinion?
I guess it depends. I mean, on what you like and what you, mm-hmm. what you feel good at. I think the important part is it's not the event, it's but how you feel when you get there. So, the thing that I've always said is, Buddy's is the one place you can go by yourself, no matter who you are, what condition you're in, and feel safe. Mm. Right? So, and that can happen any night. So as far as a good night, of course, Saturday night is our dance night fundraiser. Mm. Right? And that's fun. I mean, and, you know, we have the best drag queens in the city, and they do a couple acts, and people have fun, and the drinks are cheap. So, and the staff are great, and it's safe. Mm-hmm. It's so safe. We pride ourselves on trying to make our clientele and our as safe as possible.
And you have an event coming up there on Monday, May 28th, with David Bateman.
I do.
What is that going to be? A hybrid of spoken word and music?
Yeah, I think David and I have a book we're working on, and we got a couple grants to work on it from the OAC, and I think Coach House Books, maybe Tightrope, and it's a dual poetry book. And how that started was I sent him a poem, mm-hmm. and he sent one back an answer, and we went back and forth until we had a book.
Wow.
Yeah, it's I love it. I love it so much, and I will be reading from that, and I have a book out at Publishers made up of my Facebook stuff and some poetry and some short stories, and that'll be read too. And David's got 1 million books that he'll be reading from, you know, and he's an amazing writer and poet. So,
how long have you guys known each other?
20 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
A real connection.
Yeah. Yeah. We're both old. We're both old. You know, it's, yeah, so we relate to a lot of the same stuff. He's younger than me, though, to be fair to David. He's younger than me. He's an old soul. That's the way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
Talk to me about one of your tracks, Jesus Mafia. What's this track about?
It's about Jesus Mafia. It's I'm Roman Catholic, obviously. That's why I went to the School of Music, the convent, for piano lessons. And I always thought the Roman Catholic Church felt like a secret society, not unlike the mafia is supposed to be, or, you know, other secret societies. And that is, you know, that is pretty well what it's about. It's because they're so secretive, they're filthy rich. They own lots of property, and they control, and maybe not so much now, but they used to control governments and government decisions, and so that's pretty well. And there's also, you know, the whole thing, the silence around the sexual abuse that comes out of the Roman Catholic Church.
Right.
And that was also, you know, the whole silence and the secret society. So that's where that came from. Just simple, light-headed, light stuff, you know.
It's a simple little love song.
Yeah, exactly.
Patricia Wilson, earlier in the last segment, you were talking about your relationship of over 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
What's her name?
Hélène.
Hélène.
That's Helen with an E, French-Canadian.
And how did you guys meet?
It's we were both living in Windsor, and I was lighting designing a show at a place called the Capitol Theater, which was built by the same person that built the Elgin Theater.
Nice.
So it was very grand, and I had helped rescue that while I was the executive director of the local arts council. We had gone in and got funding for it. So it was renovated, and now this was a show, one of the first shows. I had left the Arts Council, and I was lighting design, and it was a big deal, and she was in the show. But it was an amateur type of thing where even the actors would help tear the show down, right, to save money and stuff. So as I was tearing down the show, she was helping. And we had a young dyke working with us, and Alain and I had barely talked. And Alain looked at that and said, "Oh, I wouldn't turn that down." And I looked at her and said, "I didn't." So we kind of just started dating from there, mm-hmm. slow but sure. And we took a long time to move in together. It was almost a month. And so we've been together since.
Have you ever, would you ever get married?
No, it's not my thing.
Mm-hmm. What do you know? So it's not your thing. What are your thoughts in regards to same-sex marriage?
You have to do what you have to do to make you feel good to get through the day.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what it is, then that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm not against or for it, you know, and, you know, I think they let straight people marry now too, don't they?
I think they do.
So
lucky them.
It's come a long way.
So let's talk about the gay community, the
sure.
LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want any trans individuals out there that may be hearing this interview and, you know, they get insulted, because this next question is meant with love and respect.
Mm-hmm.
But Patricia Wilson, you are a trans individual.
Yes.
And my question is, in 2018, to me, it seems as if there are more trans individuals coming out of the closet, so to speak, for lack mm-hmm. of better words.
Yeah.
What do you, in your opinion, what do you attribute that to?
Oh, geez. I mean, let me qualify this, that I had my surgery over 30 years ago. So, you know, and I'm saying that to qualify that it was a way different time then
mm-hmm.
than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And there definitely were not that many trans individuals, to use your term, around. I don't even know if I met a trans person till after
right.
I had my surgery or whatever. Mm-hmm. They just didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what do I attribute? There's so...
I mean, transgender, that word, that phrase, didn't even come into play. It was transsexual.
Yeah, yeah. And I grew up with the transsexual mm-hmm. thing. And, you know... the T word that you can't say anymore, they take you off Facebook. You know, the tranny word.
Really?
That, oh, yeah. Okay. If you have that on your Facebook, they'll shut you down.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And for me, and many people of my age, mm-hmm. that we own that word, and it was a good word,
mm-hmm.
and we described each other as that in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a different generation. Things happen, things change.
But I think people need to respect, we need to respect each other. We don't need to shut each other down.
Yeah, we're at a very dangerous time in our community.
I agree.
Where people are so, we're not gonna get any farther in our rights or times unless we stop fighting each other.
Yeah.
And nitpicking
mm-hmm.
over words, mm-hmm. over what people are doing.
Yeah.
And to get back to your question, it's as you can see, I'm hesitating because I do have opinions on that.
And
I used to say,
feel free to speak your mind, because that's what free speech is all about.
Yeah. Well, you know, many people have heard me say it's in the in the water, right? And I haven't swore once. Almost there. Anyways.
Did you? Okay.
Almost. But
honey, let it fly.
Yeah. But
let your freak flag fly.
So it's I always say it's in the water, but the way the world is right now,
mm-hmm.
it's so disempowering, the world in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we see trans individuals, like especially there's a paper out, there's a lot of fetish around transsexuality, mm-hmm. right? Especially on male to female, that's what I am. So there's a lot of fetish around that.
Okay.
And that's empowering. Fetish is empowering. And in the other way, too, there's a lot of, I feel that a lot of women don't understand how powerful it is to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But they see men with power.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think that it's a power issue. They feel that their lives will be more powerful to themselves if they transition because they don't realize how powerful they are as women. Now, mind you, that's not all people, trans people. But I feel that because the world is so disempowering now,
mm-hmm.
it's about power and gaining personal power through transition. And so I don't know how many people are truly to the same point as, you know, I either do it or I die.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, how I know of transitioning. You either do it or you die. And that's why I think, I mean, when I transitioned, OHIP paid for it way back when.
Right.
And that's because it would, for the cost of it, it would be more expensive to take care of the attempted suicides, the alcoholism, and the drugs
mm-hmm.
that would result in not letting this person transition.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's more trans people around at this point because it's so disempowering in the world, and they may feel that there's more power on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, too, that people are looking to live their authentic lives and they see more and more people in the public eye,
mm-hmm.
like Janet Mock, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they see role models and then they see the potential to be able to live their authentic lives potentially, hence why, you know, maybe in 2018, there seems to be more and more people coming out as trans.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good point. That's not something that ever crossed my mind. I to be really honest with you, I don't think about trans that often.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, unless I'm asked.
Right.
And these days, people don't want to hear what I have to say, mm-hmm. only because, I mean, let's face it.
Why do you think they don't want to hear what you have to say?
I think it's not because they don't want to hear, but what trans is now
mm-hmm.
is different than what it was for me.
How so?
Well,
how do you define trans in 2018 compared to when you transitioned?
Yeah. Trans means so much more now.
Mm-hmm.
To everybody in society and to the individuals and communities than it did when I was a kid. No, it was, you know, born male, feel female.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
Fix it. There were no politics around it. Mm-hmm. There was nothing.
Right.
And, I mean, I had it way easier than the kids and people do today. It was easy for me. It wasn't in the news. People didn't know about it.
Right.
Once in a while, people would figure you out and you would be in danger or mm-hmm. you would be made fun of or whatever. But you can be a high school kid not transitioning and be made fun of.
Right.
Right. So it wasn't that hard for me.
But you think in 2018 it's harder?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Because of things like social media, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know, you have spotlights on
right.
trans people. Like, there's no peace.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go home and have peace.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
It's everywhere. It's on television. It's
yeah.
in politics. It's in everything.
It's a bit of a double-edged sword, because on one thing, it can be empowering. Mm-hmm. On the other side, too, it can be putting, like you just said, putting a spotlight on yourself all the time.
Yeah.
You know, oh, there goes a trans person.
Exactly. And a lot of times, like growing up in Windsor, you know, and being trans, there were times, you know, it was really tough. People made fun of me. And I mean, essentially, when you start out, you're like a drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean,
yeah.
And that's fine. I love drag queens. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you're trying to function day to day,
right?
You know, in drag,
right?
Right.
Patricia Wilson, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
I'm Susan Gapka, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
So, Patricia Wilson, you grew up in Windsor, Ontario.
True enough.
When did you begin to realize your true gender? Did that happen for you? Did that begin to happen for you when you were young, when you were, like, really little?
I remember it very, very clearly. It was almost like a eureka moment. It wasn't something that I could say, you know. Yeah, I kind of grew into it. I remember waking up in the dark, in the middle of the night, and I remember very clearly my eyes opening and looking out the window and realizing that I was meant to be other. Right? I was meant to be female. It was a clear-cut moment. Almost like a realization, but clean, like a flash of light.
Mm-hmm.
And I never let it go since then. And because of it, I mean, back then, it wasn't something that was available very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And the struggle to do so put many, many things that I wanted to do on the back burner. Because it took everything I had to get where I am today.
Right.
Right, as far as I was determined to have surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, it wasn't that common.
Mm-hmm.
So the only person I knew back then that had done that was Christine Jorgensen. And I remember the struggle, and I knew from the time I was very young, and I never let it go.
And you were working as a welder in Windsor, Ontario, and that's when you decided to...
Well, that's when, I had already been to the Clark at this point. And I'd been to the Clark for probably off and on for a year or so before I transitioned, you know, because I was... I mean, the Clark was fairly new in gender studies back then.
Mm-hmm.
It was a brand new program. They didn't even understand exactly what was going on. They knew that there were individuals. And so it was... Yeah, so I was there off and on, and they had started back then, I think it was 1 or 2 years going there before they even gave me any hormones.
Right.
Because you had to be, you know, you had to go through the doctors, and they... And for me, I'm glad it went that way.
Right.
I'm glad that I have no regrets. It took a little bit longer than I wanted to. And I didn't really want... I just wanted the operation. I didn't want to have to live in the role.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because essentially, you know, drag queen.
Yeah.
Right? Which is nothing wrong. I love drag queens.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to function that way
mm-hmm.
day to day. And
was it difficult being in Windsor?
As I said before, it had its moments where people made fun,
mm-hmm.
I suppose. But, you know, like an actor or a musician,
mm-hmm.
in order to survive, you have to be so inside yourself and so egotistical mm-hmm. about what you're doing that if you get criticized, it goes right by you or you don't notice it, mm-hmm. right? You could never be a musician or an actor if you took what everybody said seriously. You'd be crippled.
Yeah.
And it's the same with that. I mean, you live in an egotistical bliss when you're transitioning, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you get up in the morning and you might see a little bit of Marilyn Monroe in the mirror until you speak. And then you realize, oh, Jesus Christ. But, yeah, so you live in that egotistical bliss where it's almost like an armor,
mm-hmm.
right, against. And I transitioned over the weekend. We didn't tell anybody I was trans. And I was a welder, like doing a MIG welding, sitting at a desk doing little parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my boss that I was going to do it. And I left on a Friday and came back as on Monday in a female role. It was so fucked. But the reason I did that was I figured at that point I knew I was not going to live in Windsor, Ontario the rest of my life.
Right.
But I knew that if I could take transitioning like this and what it was going to do, I could take anything.
Hmm.
So,
and here you are today.
And here I am today. So, and that's exactly what happened. It was tough, and eventually I lost my job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've lost a few jobs being trans in Windsor before I moved here.
Right.
So, you know, but that's that. You know, life can be a shit show. Life is hard, whether you're trans, yeah. gay, straight. It's a shit show.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Life is hard, and it's not safe. So you have to make the most of that.
You do.
You really do, right? You've got to make the most of it. So I'm lucky. I consider myself one of the... I think I have the best life ever, right? A lottery ticket would make it a little better,
mm-hmm.
or a hit record, or, you know, a million-selling book or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, those things... being trans put those a bit on the back burner for me. Because I had to concentrate so hard on becoming who I am that instead of touring,
right.
I did, you know, in the old days, when you're 16 and 17, you're on the road
mm-hmm.
and you're playing your music or doing whatever. But I had to concentrate on, you know, making a living and mm-hmm. finding surgery, mm-hmm. which was my ultimate thing.
Yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily... mean everybody goes for that. Mm-hmm. That was just my own story. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Patricia Wilson, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you. This was great.
Hi, this is Nikki Ward, and like me, you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
You're listening to Gay Radio Show Rainbow Country right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. As always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. That was my spotlight on trans musician Patricia Wilson. Make sure you check out her group, her rock group, Crack Puppy. Don't forget, get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Mark Tara Music. You want to be on the show? Send me an email, mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, podomatic.com, Google Play Music, and now, as of today, Spotify. Rainbow Country on Spotify. And don't forget, everything is hooked up through my website, including the archives, marktara.com. Next week, the female gaze. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
Hi, this is Carol Pope on CIUT 89.5 FM. Mm.